home in the country, AM 860, FM 95.1, KWPC with Tim Scott. We are pleased to announce a new programming feature to our Sunday morning programming. It's called God Talk with someone that's no stranger to the radio station, Reverend Hal Green. Mr. Green, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. And
how
good
are you?
Morning, Muscatine. Gosh, this is the beginning of a new show. I enjoy doing the show on relationships, human relationships, with Millie Morris for, gosh, 2.5 years plus. We had that on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I have wanted to do this show for quite a while because the center of my life is God, and I like to talk about God. I'm into relationships, and there's two kind of primary relationships. You got your relationship with each other, human relationships, and you have divine human relationships. And at the heart of what it is I want to talk about is they are analogous. So love between humans is not unlike love between God and humanity. Now, I don't know where you folks are listening religiously, but I spent many years as an agnostic. Actually, from about the time I was, 13 or so, and I got baptized in Disciples of Christ in Des Moines. And for a bunch of reasons, I left the church for a good 10 years, and it wasn't high in my list of priorities, if you've ever been there. I had other things concerned, you know, making my way in the world and being a young man and athletics and school and girls and all those kinds of things that we get really involved in. And so as an agnostic, you know, there's two basic kinds of agnostics. There's the agnostic who says about God, by the way, the word agnostic, agnosis means, the Greek word for knowledge is gnosis. Agnosis is one who does not know. So level one is just simply saying, I don't know whether there's a God or not, right? That's it, I don't know. Level two is to say, hey, not only do I not know, but it cannot be known. Those are different beasts. Well, I was the first kind. I didn't know. And then, life has a way of turning that can be problematic. how shall I say? The floor can fall out from under you. Yeah. Anyhow, and I began searching. It was in Denver in 1967. It was in May, I remember. And I decided, as an agnostic, and my undergraduate major at Drake had been philosophy, so I was a philosopher, and then I became a psychologist. I love to learn, I guess. Well, I began to search for God. I just wanted to know that there was God, because I'd reached a point in my life that I realized if there was no God, then Shakespeare was right. It was all sound and fury, signifying nothing. Well, it looks like we have some kind of a radio thing here. I'm not sure what this is. I guess it's over. Alarms went off in here. Okay, anyway.
Sorry, Hal, that's just a... It looks like it was a test of the emergency.
Emergency? I thought that's God calling.
Yeah.
No.
<There you go.
laughs> Everything stopped and red lights flashed. Lord? No. This wasn't just an intellectual curiosity. I really wanted to know whether God existed, because if there was no God, then for me, life had no foundation, no basis. It was all, as Shakespeare said, sound and fury, signifying nothing. And maybe in the end, we have to make up our own stories, which people love to do anymore anyway. We'll just make a virtual reality story and call that life. Meaning is what you make it. That there was no deeper, overriding meaning greater than me, greater than what we can create, but we're born into a world with that fixed. Well, anyway, one of the things that I had remembered in my limited church time growing up that had fascinated me, I must have taken it to heart was the time that Jesus said, "Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened. Ask, and you will receive. For everyone who seeks finds. Everyone who knocks, to that person the door will be open. Everyone who asks will receive." And that's where I put my pivot foot, to turn as an agnostic young man in the world in 1967. And what a different world it was in 1967. To find God, the quest, the great quest, whether there's a God. Now, there's not a particular mailing address or email, or, and of course, there was not email in 1967. How do you find God? I've had numerous discussions over the years with people. How do you find God? And there are answers, but they're not always easy. So I began searching, indirectly, I guess. And that fall of 67, I went back. I was working in Denver, and I went back and to Drake University, where I got my undergraduate degree, to take on a master's in psychology. And as luck, quote-unquote luck, would have it, one evening, through a chain of events, I was going with or dating a girl who had friends. We met the friends, and there was a prayer meeting taking place in a Catholic church in Des Moines, Iowa, dealing with what was called, this was November now of 1967, called the Baptism of the Holy Spirit. And I was, you know, a philosopher now becoming a behavioral scientist. And the guy who knew this, Bob was his name, he was a chemist getting a degree in chemistry. So he thought like a scientist too. And I said to Bob, "You mean there are supposed to be manifestations of God at this meeting?" "Yeah," he said, "that's what I understand." And I was so fascinated. So I said, "You want to go?" Well, he did. The women, his wife and the girl I was dating, didn't want to go, so we dropped them off, and we went to this Catholic church. But got there about 9 o'clock, and there were, 15 or so people. And we just sat quietly, and that began, by the way, that was the very beginning of what we come to be the Catholic Charismatic Renewal, right at the very beginning. Two guys had come from Notre Dame. They just had been sent out a few weeks before to different Newman centers at colleges and universities to bring about people encountering the Holy Spirit. Wow. Well, 1:30 in the morning, about thereabouts, so it's now Saturday morning, I encountered the Holy Spirit. It was actually while I was praying for someone else. Seemed like a nice young woman, and I said, "God, if you are there, if there's a God at all, here's a woman who's praying for, you know, whatever it is that this thing is supposed to be that we haven't seen yet, but what the heck? Give it to her, God. She looks like she really, really wants it, et cetera, et cetera." And while I was thinking of her, there's no words for it. Just the sense of beauty, love, with a spirit wind. It's sort of like, you know, opening all your doors and windows, because you needed to be open, and I obviously was open, desirous of this. And then this gentle breeze that's wonderful goes through your soul and your spirit, and then you know. And you know that you know, and it's all about love, and it's life-changing. So that changed my life there as a 24-year-old man. And really, for the rest of my life, it's really been about God, a God search, a God seeking to understand, because I am a seeker after truth. And, you know, it was years later before I actually joined the church. So I'm going somewhere with this. I hope you understand that. It was about the God relationship, and I was willing to go wherever that relationship seemed to take me. "Okay, God, I've got this relationship with you, and now I can pray." And you know, God will teach us how to pray if you just give God time. But I wasn't really a part of the church. whether it was the Catholic Church or any other church, because I had abandoned that. Well, over the years, I came to finally realize, and I've explained it this way to people, that God is into marriage, not affairs. What? In other words, religion, the various religions, constitute relationship that God establishes with humans, and they are ongoing, and once it's established, it continues. It may not be the final word of what God is doing among humanity, but it is a valid way in which to encounter, in some way, God, however you understand God. To make a long story short, finally in 1972, I had been teaching at Iowa Wesleyan College, teaching psychology in a chain of events. I ended up joining the United Methodist Church, great church, and going to seminary and serving two churches in 1972. So I would spend the next, you know, pretty much 37 years, 10 churches, 3 states, and doing other things as well. After my Master of Divinity, I stayed on Northwestern and got a PhD in comparative religion because I love to learn about this stuff. Religion's fascinating to me, as is the whole God thing. And it's fascinating to humanity, even though in the 60s, a guy named Friedrich Nietzsche, even though he had died several decades before then, he was famous for saying, God is dead. So there was a kind of a God is dead movement back in the 60s and 70s, which of course didn't last. And someone came out with a thing like on a gravestone, you know, Nietzsche dash, God is dead. And under that, God dash, Nietzsche is dead. A little bit of humor. And so the end of that whole quest. So I've been a student of religion. I'm a student of religion. I want to understand what happened before I got here. I don't know how long you folks have been alive, but there's just this incredible history, which it's kind of scary to me that so many people don't realize how important it is to be aware of our history. Or like the philosopher Santa Ana said, a people that does not know its history is condemned to repeat it. Never forget. That's true about many things, and it's certainly true about religion. Well, what is religion? Wow. It's vast. It's a vast subject. Let's look for just a minute at the word itself. There are many different viewpoints as to the origination of the word religion. I'm one of those who has bought the basic idea that the word religion comes from the Latin religare, which means to bind fast. Now, this really speaks to me. To like the binding fast of children into a given tradition, a religious traditions, no different than binding them into a family. Well, your name is Hal, and this is your family. Binding them into a language. You speak English. You know, that I don't care how many languages a person learns, when they pray, they pray in their home language. So religion is a way of binding and being bound into, we'll find out in a minute, what exactly it is you're bound into. Now, speaking as a Jew, and I was born Jewish, so that's another part of my tradition. There's a song from the great Broadway musical Fiddler on the Roof. It's called Tradition. Tradition, tradition. Great song. And Tevye, who's doing the singing, makes the comment, because of our tradition, everyone here knows who he is and what God expects him to do. Wow. That's the benefit of having a tradition. You don't have to think about what life is. There's not the confusion. There's not the, oh my goodness, is there a God? Which is a major question, which I will deal with. This is just the beginning, my friends, of a conversation. I want to carry on a conversation with you these next weeks and hopefully months. And I really invite you to contact me, to email me any questions you might have about God, about religion. And I would love to seek to answer your questions or to do my best to explain why it is that your question may not be answerable, that it may have to fall back on what's called faith, which will be another one of our major subjects. I'm just walking with you today, just going around some of the terrain. Anyway, back to tradition, how important traditions are. We have them. It's rather like a habit. When you have a habit, like a habit of getting up at a certain time, habits help us not to have to think about things. We do things because we are habituated. There's a good to that. It's good to have habits, and habits of thinking in ways in which you're comfortable, and comfort, assurance is very important. Put a little differently, there's a lot of fear for many about religion. And religion, okay, let's turn to this, whatever the religions are, and I'll talk about the four characteristics of religion shortly. Religion has given humanity a worldview, a way of understanding where we are, where we fit in what has been, what is, and what is to come. It's been wonderful in how it has given us ethical life, morality, and at the same time, religion has been terribly difficult. It's been said that nothing is worse than the perversion of the best. So religion, as we've seen in these last decades with radical Islam, which is actually a beautiful religion of peace, the radical Islam, there's nothing worse than the perversion of the best, making it into something ugly, making religion a cause of dissension, judgment. You have to think the way I do, or you will not be allowed to think, or worse, convert or die, believe in our way or face damnation. Wow. So what is this thing called religion, which I'm holding a book right now, by the way, by a noted current scholar, Diana Butler Bass, called Christianity After Religion. There are many who talk about the end of religion, and I will too, in the context of a relationship, that ultimately religion is about a relationship with each other and with God, and the relationship aspect is more important than the religion. Well, what are the four characteristics of religion? I'll give you the four B's: belief, behavior, belonging, and being with, a hyphenated final, as we'll see why. These are the four primary characteristics of a religion, which I'm saying, speaking in terms of the world religions, and I taught world religions at Muscatine Community College for 4 years. That's eight times. I'm a student of religion. Anyway, a religion has to do with a historical event. By the way, Hinduism is pretty much the only world religion without a major founder. Christianity, obviously, is Jesus. Moses, the major lawgiver for Judaism. And the great prophet Muhammad for the arising of Islam. But a religion is bound up with traditions of a prophet or some figure, generally speaking, who represents God in some way, and through that connection there is a promise of meaning of life now and in what is to come, whether there's a salvation idea, which we'll get to, or not. It's a way of living, being right with the absolute. Religion pretty much invariably involves how we stand before God, whether God's understood personally or this is absolute, whatever that may be, karma in Buddhism and Hinduism. So the first aspect is belief. Religion establishes a set of beliefs, doctrines. What do you believe? Christianity is all about belief, right? Do you believe in Jesus Christ? Have you received him into your heart? You have to believe the right things. The word orthodoxy means right belief. If you get into the history of Christianity, you wouldn't believe the horrible things that have happened over differences of belief, disagreement. From the 2nd to 5th century, the early church was determining the nature of orthodoxy and the different creeds, the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed, all of these were things that you had to believe in order to be truly Christian, like the nature of the Trinity, three persons in one substance, like the issue of Jesus. Was he just man? Was he just God? Or was he man-God? Was he, as the creeds have it, fully human and fully divine? Both. That may not make a lot of sense logically, but we have to believe. Beliefs are extremely important. Second, built on belief is behavior. Do you remember those little wrist bands that said WWJD, what would Jesus do? Christianity or Judaism, by the way, is much more about what you do. To be a Jew, you must do the Hebrew, it's the mitzvot, the commandments. There are 613 commandments in the first five books of Moses, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, Moses' books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And the Jews determined by not so much the belief structure, what you believe about God, but what you do. It's all about action, belief, mitzvot. Whereas for other religions, I mean, it depends, like to be a Muslim, if you say there is no God but Allah, which means God in the language, and Muhammad is his prophet, you are technically a Muslim. But there are things you pray five times a day. You go to Mecca, make a Hajj at least once in your life. There are certain things you must do. Well, what must you do as a Christian? We're told to love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. What we do is very important. Third, and I'll come back to some of these, religion affords us a sense of belonging. You know, I don't just have Christianity. I'm a Christian. I can't exactly tell you when, but the time came when I came to identify my whole existence on the basis of my connection to Jesus Christ. That, and I'll share later much more about that. Reality that I have this living relationship with Jesus. And really that all Christians really need to have that relationship with Jesus, to belong. So as this guy Bonhoeffer, great theologian, long story, said, he wasn't sure who he was, but he knew whose he was. Oh, Lord, I'm not sure who I am. What a great mystery. But whoever I am, oh, Lord, I am thine. I belong to you. Or as the founder that people call Methodist, John Wesley, in his great prayer said, I am no longer my own, but yours. I am no longer my own, but yours. Put me to what you will. Belonging. That is a profound sense of connection, the bond, belonging. I am a Christian. Your own identity is connected to your religion. So you don't just say, I have a religion, but I am a part of the family of God. I'm a part of the church. that's gone back now 20 centuries, and as a Jew, I'm a part of yet another tradition that goes back, wow, nearly 4,000 years. Stories, tradition, belonging. Finally, last but oh, my friends, not least, is being with. Being with. That's how you actually get to know God. So, in Christian parlance, having a personal relationship with Jesus. Do you know Jesus? I'm one of those who believe, sadly, as the prophet Hosea said in the 7th century B.C., there is no knowledge of God in the land, therefore the land suffers. There is, I'm overgeneralizing, but looking at the state of morality, the state of respect, the loss of so much of our civility, there is no knowledge of God in the land. Meaning, we don't know how to be with God. Now, my friends, I've been a contemplative for, gosh, more than 40 years. 40 years. I've taught prayer. I've taught prayer in most of my churches. I've done workshops. For 12 years here in Muscatine, my last appointment was the pastor at Wesleyan on Methodist Church. I would take men up to New Mellery Abbey for 48 hours of prayer. I would do monthly prayer practices, seeking to teach people how to get connected, how to learn more about God. What good is it, I ask, to believe in God and to be doing whatever actions you may, do for the sake of your faith, your religion, and to have a sense of belonging? Hey, I'm a part of, your church or synagogue or mosque or whatever, but you don't know God. Do you think something's kind of missing? Never actually encountered God? Well, I've been blessed to be a part of situations where people did get a greater sense of the presence and reality and truth of God. Let me use an analogy from human marriage. I've done this with couples. Let's say this, okay, and I've done this like pre-marriage counseling as well as marriage counseling. So I say, well, typically I say this to the guy with a woman going to ask her a question. So I say to the woman, let's say that your husband believes all the right things about marriage. One, marriage, fidelity, all, he believes it. Second, let's say that he does all these right things, takes out garbage, helps with the dishes, with the family, whatever it is, he's doing things. Third, let's say that he really feels a sense of belonging to you and to each other in your union. So you got those three things going, right? But let's say there's one thing missing. His heart is far from you. His heart is far from you. Are you a happy woman? And guess what the woman always says? No. Well, I ask you, should it be any different with God? People not having a hunger for God, seeking God, is for me the strangest mystery that I've ever encountered over all my years of working with people in the church, is why isn't there a greater hunger for God? And I'm going to address that in future talks, because I know our time is coming down. That's really the key of it. The most important thing is, do you seek me? Hey, it said, love covers a multitude of sins. We're told that in the Hebrew Bible as well as the New Testament. Why is that? Well, you may not always do right. You may not always believe right. But by God, your heart is with me. You do love me. You do love me. That I've seen in marriage therapy. After talking about this issue and that issue, and finally we get down to it. I don't think you love me anymore. Do you love me? That's the crux of it. It's the relationship. It's not so much the belief or the doings or the belonging. It's all about, do you want to be with me? I'm going to be talking more about prayer next time. What is prayer? What does it mean to be with God? How can we get there? I have much I want to tell you. I have been at this for a very, very long time. And I've got, like, how many seconds have I got, Tim?
You have about, let's say, 2 minutes, sir.
Oh, good. Okay, then I'm going to end with my one of my very favorite definitions of religion by the philosopher, theologian Paul Tillich, because I've really hit people with this over the years. Okay, religion is your ultimate concern. Religion is your ultimate concern. Now, there's two meanings to ultimate. One is the end of the road, the final horizon when you die. What's on the other side? And I want to talk to you about that. Talk about near-death experiences. I've encountered things directly. It gets wonderful there. There is a heaven, and it can begin now. I want to talk to you about that. But ultimate. So a person may be walking backwards to the cliff that is their death, or they can be walking frontwards. But nevertheless, at some point, typically with death experience, that's when it hits you. Is there a God? What's coming after this? Religion is your ultimate concern. Second, ultimate in the sense of what's the most important thing in your daily life right now? Do you have a ground? Are you rooted and grounded and comfortable in a religious faith with a God or not? Well, as Jesus says, when the storms come, if your life is built on sand, you're going to get washed away like so many people did, tragically, in the southeastern part of this country recently. Well, my friends, this is the end of our first talk together. Contact me, drhalgreen@gmail.com, DRHALGREEN @gmail, with any questions, and I will answer your questions as best I can, and I will do so without naming your name. You can write me, I assure you. It'll be just between you and me, but write me, drhalgreen@gmail. Blessings, my friends.
Thank you, Dr. Hal. And again, you can hear Dr. Hal Green's God Talk every Sunday morning between 8:30 and 9 right here on KWPC Muscatine. This short break, and then we'll be right back with the Calvary broadcast.
Less calories and fat, and oh so delicious. It's what every light bread wants to be. Leave it to the bakers of Village Hearth to have the perfect recipe.